It's time for Twig, and what a big show we have. Jeff and Gina are here, and right out of the gate, we're going to talk about the new CEO at Yahoo, Marissa Meyer. What are the challenges? What are the opportunities? Next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twig.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly, CacheFly.com. This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 155, recorded July 18th, 2012. To the Cat Cave. This Week in Google is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it right from your desk. For our special offer, visit Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and use the offer code TWIG. And by Ford, featuring the My Ford Mobile smartphone app for electric vehicles. The My Ford Mobile app makes the electric driving experience fun and efficient. Learn more about Ford electric vehicle technologies at Ford.com/technology. And by Ting.com. Ting gives you big savings and billing clarity for mobile phone service. Try their online savings calculator and save $50 on your device purchase at Ting.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that talks about the latest in the cloud. Boy, that's a mouthful right there. This week especially. Let's say hello to Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org, founding editor at Lifehacker. Hi, Gina.
Hello.
And to my left, your right, to my right, your left, Mr. Jeff Jarvis.
Hey.
City University of New York journalism professor, longtime journalist himself, blogger at BuzzMachine.com, and the author of a brand new book called Public Parts, available everywhere. Hello, everybody. There's a lot to talk about
this week. Lots to talk about this week.
Lot to talk about. Should we start with Marissa Meyer?
Yeah.
Yes.
We've talked for a long time about Yahoo and the struggles Yahoo was facing. And the last we heard looked like Russ Levinson was going to keep the interim CEO title and be the CEO active forever because the guy at Hulu said, I don't want that job no matter what. And then out of the blue yesterday, Marissa Meyer, number 20 employee at Google, takes the job as CEO. Here's People Magazine's, I think, very lovely coverage of Marissa Meyer.
No one can let go of the glamour spread.
Oh, my God.
Note to self, never do glamour spread.
Yeah. Hey, anyway. You know what? In a way, and we were talking about engineers, because we had Jolie O'Dell, who is quite the fashion plate, and Becky Worley on Twit on Sunday, and both of them very attractive. And I was talking a little bit, and it seemed to me that maybe we were in a post-feminist era where you could be a feminist and still dress up and be in glamour and still be, really accomplished and be judged for your skills. But this, I have to say, is not.
Yeah, I mean, I Marissa has said for some time, I'm not a girl at Google, I'm a geek at Google. And yep. I think that's, really important. Howard Kurtz from CNN said on Twitter, well, is she getting all this attention just because she's a woman and pretty? And I said, well, no, I think that's the sexist question right there. No, right. She's getting all this attention because she deserves all this attention because she's got vision and she's a hell of a geek and tough. And this is a gutsy move to go to Yahoo. And that's why she's getting all the attention.
But God
but then
damn.
Again, then
look
somebody
at this.
Sent me that people thing. And it was
this
just,
people
just,
thing. So number, so here's. It's not merely the picture. Here's a list of things, five things you need to know about Yahoo's new leader. She made history as the first female engineer at Google. Okay, that's all well and good. Number two, she's glamorous, Glamour magazine. So is her apartment. These are the five things you need to know about Marissa Meyer.
Well, her cupcake, magazine reader.
Her cupcake recipe is better than yours.
That's the worst.
And she's going to be a mom. Wow. But you're right. I mean, there's not
search.
Yeah,
that she changed our vision of web design.
But it is People Magazine. I mean,
it's People Magazine.
I really liked what Mike Arrington wrote in Uncrunched.
He's, of course, good friends with Marissa, has interviewed her many times, not only for TechCrunch, but on stage at Le Web. I've seen him three times, I think, interview Marissa Meyer. I think this is kind of right on. He says, it's not just another story about another exec playing musical chairs and switching jobs. What the press has missed so far is this is a paradigm shift for Yahoo. Meyer, I love this, is completely out of Yahoo's league.
She is. This is what I loved, is that the angle of the story was that this was a huge coup for Yahoo.
No.
Not that this was like a big accomplishment for Meyer, but that it was a huge coup for
it
Yahoo.
Was.
That made me really happy it because was. That gets it right.
It is right. He says, so far out, so warf, so far out, I'm surprised they even had the courage to approach her, although it's possible she approached them.
I mean, it makes that part makes sense because glass ceiling or no, there was a ceiling of having young people in charge of the company, and she's they kind of passed her over this last time when she didn't get the senior VP level. Even if she gets it, how far is she going to go?
Right,
and now she can head a company, and now you have two executives, three executives, made by Google, Sheryl. At
Sandberg,
Facebook, Tim at Tim Armstrong at AOL, and now Marissa at Yahoo, each with tough jobs.
Arrington goes on to say, overnight, Yahoo's reputation will change. At first, it will just be in Silicon Valley, but as of now, people won't be ashamed to say they work at Yahoo anymore. And for the last several years, they certainly have been ashamed. More key employees will stick around. The company will be able to hire better people. People will be proud to work at the company. Morale will shift immediately. There'll be lots more positive thinking. All of this
may actually be a vision.
Yeah, all of this without her doing anything but walking in the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree. I think Mike hit the nail on the head on this.
It's great for Yahoo.
Yeah.
I'm the biggest fan of Marissa. I think that, I've met her at a lot of conferences and talked with her and interviewed her at CUNY. She has a vision. I've talked about the hyper-personal news stream, about the new kinds of services that you can bring. And I think that the people are thinking way too small and just debating about whether, and she said this too, debating whether Yahoo is a technology or a content company. I'm sure she has wholly new things in mind.
Hearing about this news, I was looking at it. I mean, I think it's great for Yahoo, and I think it's great for the industry, right? Because I don't want to live in a web industry where the two biggest companies are Google and Facebook. I'm excited about, the possibility for Yahoo. And she did just make Yahoo a cool place to be, a place with opportunity and challenges ahead of it. But I was looking at it from her perspective, okay? So let's look at it from her perspective. This woman she's 6 months pregnant. She has zero financial incentive to take any job.
She doesn't need to work.
This is the toughest job out there. It's left a string of failures in its wake.
Fifth CEO in a year.
It's like the most public, highly scrutinized, high pressure. She looked at that opportunity and was like, yeah,
I'll do that.
I'm going to do that. Man, that takes guts. I am just so impressed with her. I mean, there was never any doubt in my mind that there was any lack of ambition or drive or vision on her part. And I think that she's going to do great. I know she's going to do great. But I just from an individual opportunity, life choice point of view, I give her a lot of credit. That takes guts.
Gutsy move. You bet.
Gutsy indeed.
Unfortunately, the headline in the Christian Science Monitor is reignites debate over pregnant women in the workplace. I just want to
What debate?
Slug them. Interesting article from Jolie Odell, actually, in VentureBeat. She says the reason Marissa Meyer left Google, she had to. Now, I don't know if this is all speculation or...
Well, she was saying that she wasn't going anywhere at Google.
I think that's probably true. I thought, nobody thought this, but I thought when she didn't get selected for the five people running Google...
Yeah, you pointed that out, Leo. I remembered that show. You mentioned that.
I thought that was a slight.
It was a slight, and I kind of downplayed it and was kind of like, no, it's fine, because I just felt defensive of her because I've been an admirer of hers for a long time. But, it's true.
Yeah.
She didn't kind of make it up into the...
She's employee 20. She did search. She was responsible for search in Google's heyday in search. They, instead of putting her in that executive suite with the other four guys, Larry Page and the others, they said, oh, here, you take location.
Yeah. And I mean, she was the face of the company really early on, but the last three Google I/Os, she was never on stage. I mean, she's been a lot less public face of the company than she has been.
Yep.
You know, it's interesting, this the People article aside, there's a Business Insider article.
I thought that was very interesting. Go ahead.
Yes, it was very interesting.
Yeah, so the Business Insider article, it says the headline is "The Truth About Marissa Mayer. She has two contrasting reputations." And it's this conspiracy that she wears dresses and likes cupcakes and fashion, but she's also this, like, workaholic tyrant manager. And I find this to be kind
really
of sexist.
Insulting.
Because
yeah.
it's like, so you can't wear a dress and be a tyrant? And there was never any doubt in my mind that she was a tyrant to work for. The woman is she's like answering email at 4:30 in the morning. I mean, she's notorious for being a relentless workaholic and extremely bright on top of that. And I mean, she never made any bones about that. I mean, sure, she did a glamour spread, but she also obviously works really hard. And so this Business Insider article interviewed people at Google who said, she would make people sit outside her office for sign up for office hours and sit outside her office and it was, very condescending. She was inaccessible. I mean, I remember Fast Company and different magazines kind of profiling the way that she worked. And that open office hours, I mean, every day her door was open to anyone at any level at the company could approach her and pitch her and talk over product with her. And I always thought that that was a good thing. So I just, this article bothered me a lot more than the People. People magazine, I sort of expect fluff.
I think this article might reflect yes, I mean, obviously they have quotes from a lot of Googlers about how horrible Mayer was, but it might reflect what we might see more of, which is a campaign now, because, frankly, a weak Yahoo is good for Google, right? A campaign now against Yahoo.
I don't think it was that notorious. I mean, I see your point, Gina, and I agree with what you've said. Kara Swisher called that same piece spot on. And what this piece also said was that Marissa, because what it said in the end was that Marissa has grown and matured, and that in her early days at Google, she might have been more, well, I don't know what the word is.
Accommodating?
Apparently she humiliates her people, and who does that sound like, by the way?
That's the other point. It's like Steve Jobs.
Oh, right? Okay. I'm sorry. I should just shut up there.
Yeah. By the way, let's find out how many of her employees have antacid.
Apparently, all of mine do. Before the show, I asked for an antacid, and every single one of my team came up with antacids for me. Like, they all are sitting there chewing Tums all day, and you think Marissa Mayer is a tyrant?
I mean, I've talked to Googlers too about Marissa, and I think that the part of it that was right is there are kind of two views of her. Some felt that she was a really good public spokesperson. Some thought that she was, very un-Google in how she was being public. Some felt that she was, tough and direct. Some felt, and you're going to find that with any boss. That's the reality. The real skill of the manager then is to do the job well and as much as you can not care about the junk part of it and listen to the important part. And what I got out of that article was that she... I don't want to say softened, that's the wrong word, but she changed some of her ways in a way that made her more effective, and that means she learned.
She matured.
Yeah.
She matured. She's been at Google for 13 years. She's 37. That put her in her early 20s when she started there, 24. Right. You change a lot. There's a lot of changes between 24 and 37, but, when you're at a place for that long and people remember you kind of that early, it can kind of hamper your growth. Sometimes you do need to go someplace else to...
Gina, you told me this is true or not too, but you live in a world filled with boy geeks. And I'll bet at some point she, in a position of very high authority in the startup, with a whole bunch of difficult boy geeks working for her, had to decide to be tough, had to be demanding, couldn't play into parts, and had to establish herself as a true authority in the company. And then once that's established, then you can kind of change the rules a little bit. But at first, I would imagine I'm very sympathetic to the idea that she had to be no nonsense.
Absolutely. I had one of my bloggers at Lifehacker work for me for 4 years and we're good friends, kind of offhandedly during a conversation was like, oh, well, when you were being a tyrant. I mean, I've been called a tyrant. And, to me, being a tyrant is like getting stuff done. Sometimes you need to set high expectations and you don't suffer fools and you just say that this is what it is. So in this Business Insider article, this source, someone from inside Google, described an executive who will work harder than anyone, great, is smarter than 99% of the people, great, but can't scale herself and doesn't understand managing any other way than intimidation or humiliation. I mean, anyone who's managed people, even if it's a small, from a small team to a huge company, knows that you grow as a manager, and you definitely go through the bullying stage. I certainly apparently did. And we'll probably, I mean, sometimes you got to put your foot down. The thing is that does not, you know, just because she likes cupcakes and fashion and, you know, interviewed Lady Gaga doesn't mean that she's not a tough manager. And hey, she's got to be tough. She's got a tough job ahead of her. So,
well, that's the real question here is, what the F do you do with Yahoo?
That's where I want to go. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on the gossip side of this. We did.
Oh.
And that's it. Done. It's BS. Yahoo scored. They got perhaps the one person who could get people to go, oh, Yahoo. Fred Wilson said, hey, suddenly Yahoo's interesting again. That's big.
Others in my world said, hey, New York Times looking for CEO. Beat that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she would have never taken a job at New York Times.
But, I don't think so.
I like Farhad Manju's take in Slate. He says, Marissa Meyer is in over her head, and that's just how she likes it. She has bitten off a huge challenge. So what do you do?
I think that she's going to see beyond what Yahoo was. And when she sloughed off that question about is it tech or content, I think she sees beyond that. She wants an extraordinary experience for people. She sees being useful. I think we're going to kiss goodbye to the overdone Yahoo structure and a simplification of Yahoo. And I think she's going to invent some new services that are useful to people in their lives and see beyond search and beyond social and beyond content. But I don't know what the hell that is.
The betting sheet on her is that she's data driven. Of course, certainly Google is data driven, right?
Yeah, she's always said that.
So is there a data that you can use to decide? Well, first of all, one of the first things she probably has to do is kill stuff, decide what to kill and what to keep, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as a gift to all us geeks, throw some nice rose petals on top of Flickr and make it wonderful again.
If anybody would do that, it would.
Did you see dearmarissameyer.com?
No. Yeah. This is a website already. Yes. Dearmarissameyer.com. Wow.
Yep.
And it's what to do?
Yep. No, it just has one request.
One request.
Please make Flickr awesome again. The internet.
Love the internet.
That is great. But it's not just Flickr. Great. There's a lot of properties at Yahoo that are great, maybe underperforming. Yahoo, by the way, nobody noticed this in the announcement that they were hiring Marissa Meyer, actually released their earnings at the same time. And
only made the challenge greater.
Right. I mean, but they're not hemorrhaging. They're just not growing. They're not, you know, they're doing okay. So kill stuff, right?
Kill stuff, products and staff. I mean, downsize staff and products.
Refocus.
There's a really great list of bits of advice from a former Yahoo Glitter.
I loved that article. Yeah.
Sriram Krishnan. Apologies for messing up the name. But it's a list of 10 things. This is my favorite one, I think. Well, there's a few of my favorites. Number 4, make a huge sign with the phrase, the premier digital media company. Then make a video of you running a bulldozer over it, crushing that sign. No one knows what that phrase means. Come up with a goal that people can actually visualize and isn't meaningless corporate mumbo jumbo. This is the best part. Here's a suggestion. Quote, a Yahoo app on every home screen.
That's a good mission statement.
That's a
Microsoft-y,
that is a good goal.
Microsoft-ian mission statement.
Mm-hmm.
And he also says, item number 6, find out what it would take to buy Kara Swisher's Silence Forever.
Well worth it.
We ship code, not slide decks. And this is actually what gave me this idea. Make a table with the columns invest, maintenance mode, kill, and fill it up with Yahoo's product portfolio. Share it with the employees and press so everyone finds out from you rather than Kara as to what your priorities are. And then favor the kill column whenever in doubt.
Yep.
Say no.
Which is a lesson I think that Larry has been teaching lately.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I actually really enjoyed this article because I thought it was an insider's point of view.
I still want to hear from both of you. Where do you? I think it's probably in personalized services that make your life better. Where do you think the opportunity is?
Well, I guess that's the question. Is it a content company or a web service company?
That's what she rejected. She said it's neither. It's a place that makes magnificent experiences.
No, you. I'm sorry.
Well, okay.
That's the right thing for her to say on day one.
Right.
Right.
But at some point, don't you have to make the distinction? Isn't that part of saying?
I hope it's not a content company. Content, I mean, Tim Armstrong bet his farm on content. And he, you know, one thing about AOL was that the brand of AOL turns out to be fairly positively viewed, but empty. No one knows what it is. So right. You can make it anything. Made it into a content company.
I would say Yahoo's the same to some degree.
More negatively viewed, I think, right now, but is similarly empty because nobody knows what the hell it is, neither did any of its CEOs. So it can be something new. I'm going in part from what I've heard her say personally about the things like the hyper-personal news stream, that she has this vision of, when I have this data on you, what can I give you? What can I do for you? Now, to do that, to get the data on us, the problem is she doesn't have any relationship with us.
What is Yahoo's business?
Oh, it's ad sales. It's old ad sales.
Just the same as Google.
Yep. Well, no. It's more like AOL's. It's ad sales on top of content. It doesn't have the kind of data that Google has and Facebook has.
But Yahoo Mail's bigger than Gmail.
Yeah, so dumb question. Like, where is this content? Like, so my Yahoo used to be my homepage, you know, forever ago. I haven't looked at it. But, like, when you say content, this is just like...
Go to omg.com.
Okay. omg.com.
This is one of the largest sites on the internet that you've never heard of.
Okay, Katie, so this is just a gossip. This is a gossip.
Yep.
This is
a tabloid. A Yahoo Finance is still gigantic.
Yep.
Katie Couric is doing a show for Yahoo. ABC News is content.
They do a lot of video. Becky Worley does Yahoo. Here's Yahoo Kids. This is a portal.
Okay.
So what they do now is Yahoo, in the days of when they hired Terry Semel from Warner Brothers, going to set up a Hollywood studio and make it into that. And that culture is still somewhat there. It's an ad sales on top of content culture. I've always said Yahoo is the last old media company. And it still is just that.
Is that too much of a sea change to turn it into something like a web services company?
I think if you favor the kill column and you bring in some talented technology people, a few technology people can create some great things.
Is Flickr a web service? I guess it is. It's really not a content play.
No, it's a web service.
It's a web service, as is Delicious.
Delicious, Yahoo, well, they don't have that anymore.
They don't have Delicious, that's right.
Well, apparently Flickr is going to launch something, a really great mobile app soon. So,
did you hear that last year?
It's called InstaFlickr.
I have to say, right now, it's finance, sports. It really is very much a content company right now. So much so that it might be too late to change, right?
Yeah, I mean, it might be, but I think, let's put it this way, Leo. I think that it absolutely was too late to change. I've written off Yahoo.
But yeah, me too.
That's what changed it.
Right.
Marissa Meyer coming in changes that immensely. And I believe the thing that I have faith in is that she has vision.
So here's
and
a great...
And she wasn't able to execute on that vision at Google in the last 2 years.
Thanks to Trip70 in the chat room, who's pointed me to the Wikipedia list of Yahoo-owned sites and services page.
Oh, very helpful.
Fire Eagle. I think that's gone now. Flickr. Foxy Tunes, a browser extension. Upcoming, the invite site. Wretch, a Taiwanese social networking service. Rivals.com's college recruiting site.
Oh, yeah.
Yahoo Answers.
Oh boy, that's
how is Babby formed? Yahoo Avatars, Yahoo Autos, Yahoo Access, Yahoo Bookmarks, Developer Network, Directory, Finance, Games, Yahoo Green, an environmentally conscious lifestyle site. Yahoo Groups, Yahoo Kids, Yahoo Coprol, an Indonesian social networking service. Oh, Yahoo Local.
Yeah, well, that... Okay. That
I mean, they tried to buy Yelp, and Yelp said, screw you.
And this was also a big deal that they had done with newspapers, and Yahoo got newspapers to sell ads on there, and it soured badly.
Yahoo Mail seems like an opportunity.
I think it is. I agree. I would love to see Yahoo Mail.
How about Yahoo Maps? Is it dead? Is Bing and... Avi and Google and Apple Maps.
Yeah, I want to go back to mail. I'm going to disagree. I think that mail as a category is dead. I hate to say it. No, not dead. Is mortally screwed up. And
ooh, there's an opportunity.
I think there is. I think that's why we've talked about this in the show before, where Bob Wyman from Google taught me about the problem with email is it's sender controlled, and that's why I got all messed up. And that's why I think Google Plus is recipient controlled, but that's around an odd mission of Google's to learn more about us. I think you could reinvent mail in some radical new ways that really give the recipient control over it. That's an opportunity. That's a kind of magnificent service way that I think she'd think.
Yeah.
Mm. So not straight webmail.
No, that's something done, right? Gmail and Hotmail. How are you going to do? You can't compete with those at this point.
And I don't believe that the ad performance on Gmail is very good. I think it tells them other things, but I can't imagine. I've never clicked on a Gmail ad.
Right.
You know, I just
Yahoo Messenger. A lot of people used to use that, right?
Yeah, I think I still log into that in my IM client.
Yahoo Movies. Yahoo That's even has a content. Music service. Remember Launchcast? Wow.
Well, remember how they made Mark Cuban rich.
Right? Broadcast.com.
Bought Broadcast.com, and how long did it last, Leo?
I don't know. Less than a year, right? It wasn't very long.
What was that worth? Like $1.5 billion?
Yeah, they paid him so much money. In fact, I was hoping to get some of that stupid money early on. Yahoo Pipes is great.
Yes.
But if this, then that kind of...
Right. If this, then that did it better and easier and cleaner.
They did.
And I have to think Yahoo has the engineers I would hope that there's engineers in Yahoo who go, thank God I can go to Marissa and say, look, this is Pipes. We could make this something really great. And she would listen and she would get it. Yahoo has shopping. You know, Yahoo has a lot of like e-commerce, small business sites, right?
Well, and that's another thing. When I started stuff at Condé Nast way back in the day, you couldn't do shopping. There's a Fortune cover on the death of cash. And back in the day, what it took even for a large company like that to get a credit account to accept money. So when we first started selling stuff, we used Yahoo Store.
Sure. It was easy. In fact, I'm looking at all this stuff. They bought Dialpad. Yeah, they have a voice. They have a VoIP play. They have web analytics.
To die.
They
Yahoo
have
Voice and Yahoo Voices.
Which is associated content.
Well, they bought associated content, right? Which is the kind of better demand media.
Yep.
The less evil demand media.
So it's really interesting. When you put this all together, it looks like Google's bizarro twin.
But it looks like everything Google's killing.
Yeah. Well.
Yeah.
It looks like there's no focus whatsoever to it. None. Hasn't been for a decade.
They had an auctions site. That's gone.
Yeah. I'd love to see also the list of things they bought that they've messed up.
They ran Babelfish. They had the translation service.
Remember Yahoo 360?
Yahoo 360.
Let's not forget, they bought Bill Gross's ad structure. What was it called? But that was Google's ad model before Google had it.
Right.
Yahoo had it, and they didn't know what to do with it.
So I can totally understand. You hit the nail on the head, Gina, when you said Marissa Meyer doesn't need money. She's set for life. Mm-hmm. She wanted a challenge. She wanted the biggest challenge in Silicon Valley, and she took it. And you know what? She's either going to make her reputation and be the next Steve Jobs.
Yep.
Really great opportunity.
Cupcakes, be very happy.
Or she'll say, hey, you know, it didn't work. And she'll be the next Carol Bartz.
No, I don't think so. I mean, I guess there's a chance that she could just come in and surprise us all of this hype we're giving and say no. But let's play with it. What if she, even if she fails, there are some jobs in the world where even if you fail and you give it the college try and you show some vision, but you took over something, is it possible that she can not succeed but not fail?
Yeah, I do.
Not succeeding is failing, though, right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But not fail personally.
I see.
Not lose all respect that people have for her, that they can admire what
Look at Kevin Rose.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, a good college try is definitely part of the Silicon Valley culture.
Exactly.
And nobody's going to look at it and say, oh, you took a great company and ran it into the ground. It's like if you took over RIM. That'd be the only company she could take over that would have been worse.
Oh.
Hey, Marissa, buy RIM.
But she could get it tomorrow for not much, get some patents with
it. It's a deal.
So what does she do? What's her relationship with Google? And what's her relationship with Bing, you think? What's her relationship
with search? I think this Business Insider story tells you everything you need to know about her relationship with Google. The long knives are out. She left. And Google is, I think it's Google PR right there in that Business Insider article. They said, go get her.
Did you see her Twitter, though? She took a picture of Google. Her colleagues at Google gave her these big balloons, like each balloon for, you know, 13 balloons a piece, and with a purple one at the top. It was you know, kind of sending her off to Yahoo. I don't know. I saw a lot of good, I don't know, just from the people I follow on Twitter and Google Plus, I saw a lot of goodwill from her, her colleagues.
Too. Yeah, I'm not so sure, Leo. I wonder whether... you know, Tim Armstrong has a decent relationship with Google from AOL. They have a big business relationship. Google's not foolish about this. They're not going to diss her for the sake of dissing her. She surely is not going to do anything in search. Where is she better off?
I said this yesterday. I think what's going to happen is Microsoft, Facebook, Yahoo. It's a new Axis powers aligned against Google.
Interesting.
And maybe you throw Apple in there. This is a real opportunity for Apple. We were talking about MacBreak Weekly. Apple should now, as it's done with Twitter and Facebook, include Yahoo as part of its, because they want to push out Google, right? So who are the Axis? Who is the Axis, the anti-Google Axis?
Facebook.
Yeah. Facebook.
And Microsoft. Yahoo kind of can hook
maybe throw in Nokia, throw in Yahoo. There's a few companies that might line up against Google.
I mean, no one knows Google's strengths and weaknesses, I think, as well as she does. That's for sure. And she has the relationships
Google would
there.
Be smart. Yeah, Google would be smart to continue that and cultivate that, I think. And they're not dumb. They're not emotional there. They're data-driven.
Look at these balloons. Wow. And the purple one at the top, that's cute. From her Yahoo, from her Google colleagues.
And then she also put up a picture of her, that. Okay.
Yeah, from the Yahoo colleagues, she got a layette set with a purple rubber duck.
That's cute.
That's actually very sweet. So sure she started today, right?
Yeah.
Yesterday.
So there was no transition. It was like, whoom.
Yeah, and apparently
she
no non-compete.
On Monday.
No non-compete, I guess, huh? That's what happens when you're employee 20.
Google
Well, when you don't take anything to leave, there's no non-compete because there's no...
Non-competes are illegal in California anyway, so...
Anyway, and they're mainly used just when you quit and get severance.
Right. Oh, I see. Yeah, they could say, hey, okay, we'll give you some money, but,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, if you walk out, they have absolutely no call on you, except, you know, unless she has corporate secrets and that kind of stuff, but she's going to be smart about that.
You know, it's funny, 2 weeks before she took the job at Yahoo, she announced she was going to watch Breaking Bad and catch up an episode a day. Sorry, Marissa, I don't think you're ever going to get to season 5.
She'll have time when she's in her 1 week return.
Yeah,
leave.
Later.
Her 1 week return to leave when she's working through it.
Yeah. Yeah, in between emails and nursing, you can watch maybe 10 minutes at a time.
So get granular. Search in Yahoo. What do you do?
Well, does Yahoo not use Bing? Isn't that what Yahoo Search has become? Bing. Isn't that right?
Yes.
So they don't have a search product.
Search is so yesterday.
Exactly. So
what do you do? Social, right? Social has replaced search, right?
Social and content. Content, social.
Does Yahoo have a good social play? What if you went after Facebook?
I wouldn't go after Facebook. I'd go after
Twitter. That's actually right, because remember, they sued Facebook, and the part of the settlement was we're now intertwined.
Right. I would go after Twitter if I were her.
Twitter. Yeah, well, or purchase Twitter.
She understands feeds of information and data around that, and she's got to try to get a relationship going with people and data around that relationship.
Do you remember a little something called Yahoo Meme?
No.
Meme?
Meme. No. It was a Twitter clone. They killed it 2 months ago.
Jeez.
I guess they probably still have the code in a drawer somewhere. They could pull it out.
Does she have any war chest to buy anything?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. Let me just look at the Yahoo earnings. I don't know how much cash they have, but let's just see. Because, you know, this was a good way to hide the earnings report.
By the way,
before we talk about how much money we lost, I don't think they did. I think they did all right. I'm just seeing if I can find that.
Well, all right on Yahoo terms.
Yahoo. I can't. I'm going to find it. I probably could get it on finance.yahoo.com. Yahoo beats Q2 earnings with 27 cents a share. Let's see what their cash position is, though. That's what we want. That's what you mean by a war chest, right?
Yes. Yes.
They had $1 billion in revenue, earnings of 27 cents a share, search revenue, $461 million. I mean, this is not a poor, tiny company.
Yeah, you don't just throw that away.
That was down but 1% year over year. Display revenue up 2% to $535 million. Chat room, do you have this is great. We'll have the chat room do the research. What is Yahoo's cash position? I don't see it here.
Cringely just posted the chat room says this afternoon about Yahoo's relatively good financial standing. I don't know if that's...
You can see why an engineer would grasp this bull by the horns and say, this is a challenge. How do you take this company, this venerable company, one of the old internet stalwarts, how do you change it? Not the market cap, the cash position. How do you save it? It's an opportunity, right?
You're right. I mean, and that's the way an engineer looks at it. It's a problem. So how would she define the problem, both from a Yahoo perspective and a consumer perspective? She's clearly thinking consumer.
So they don't have a lot of cash, $2.2 billion.
And I can't buy much. You can't buy Twitter.
You can't buy Twitter, for instance, yeah. But so you're going to be building, not buying.
Yep. But she can attract the talent.
That's right.
And if you got, let me understand this. If you came in as a new employee now and got options now, you got to believe it's at its lowest ebb.
I'd take them.
Kind of like a startup.
So there are going to be others like her who said, let's take this challenge. I think she builds a team of maybe some ex-Googlers, some hot shots who say, yeah, and this is what I do if I'm Marissa Meyer. Let's go. Let's take this challenge. Look, I just took a big challenge, a big leap. I believe in this company. Will you join me and help build the next generation Yahoo?
She has to define what she thinks that is, though, first. Yes, I want to know, what is your vision?
Well, she's smart because she's not doing that in public.
Well, right. She said she wants to get rid of the distractions and create a user experience, a clean user experience that delights. But what is the user experience? Is the user experience OMG.com?
Right.
It's got to be value. She understands delivering value, and OMG is not value. It's content to put an ad on top of it.
And truth is, content is nowadays is a commodity.
Yes.
It's very hard to differentiate yourself. In fact, we didn't even know OMG was a Yahoo property. It says it, but who cares? It's a commodity.
I went Monday to Indianapolis, lucky me. Just a joke, Indianapolis. Who's yours? where I spoke about speaking to speakers at the National Speakers Association. Very meta. And I had what I thought was not a terribly controversial argument about trying to make things into more of a conversation. Then I leapt down into the room, which I loved doing, played Oprah and ran around and had a conversation. And some people in the room really objected and said, well, no, we're content. We create content. We create valuable content. They sounded exactly like newspaper people to me. And I wrote a post about this. It really occurs to me that it's a trap. That if you think, well, I make content and content has value and that's the end of the story, then you cut yourself off from all kinds of new opportunities, A. B, you're in a commoditized business, where C, you have no end of new competitors. And I don't think that anybody should want to be in the content business. But you're not in the content business, Leo. You are really in the relationship business. You create communities. The chat room, God bless them.
Nice backpedal, Jeff.
No.
But not you, Leo. That's okay.
I believe it. No, you're not in the content business.
Well, we are not commoditized content. You're right. And yeah, the way you be not commoditized is relationship is unique. Now, here's my thinking. There's no way Marissa Meyer takes this job without going home, sitting and thinking really hard. And there's no way she takes this job without a plan. She has in her mind what she believes will a plan that will save Yahoo. And it would be my guess it's gutsy. It's unexpected, and she's sure as hell not going to tell me or Kara Swisher.
I hope that involves her running a sign over with a bulldozer, though. How awesome would that be?
Yeah. Well, we'll see.
Preferably before she gives birth. I want her pregnant on the bulldozer.
That's lady on a bulldozer. That's what we want. Running over a sign.
That would be awesome. She's a little more dignified than that.
Do you think she calls Jerry Yang? And says,
you know, I wouldn't. It's like if you're gonna remake the Munsters, don't call the people who used to play them.
Right. Starting over, starting fresh, freshly.
I would not call Jerry Yang. No.
I'm sure she has somewhere a piece of paper with a line down the middle that says strengths, weaknesses.
She's got spreadsheets, no doubt.
Spreadsheets.
Oh, yeah.
I love it. I love it. I think this is, well, for us, it's a story you look for, these kinds of stories. But also, I don't know if this has been clear all along. I've been rooting for Yahoo all along. This is legendary. I mean, I remember Jerry and David, and I remember akabono.stanford.edu, and this was the internet started at Yahoo and for many
years. Yeah, but you know what, Leo? I also remember the snottiest meetings I had in Silicon Valley back in the day was Yahoo.
Well, see, here's where I'm at an advantage. I never meet with anybody.
They were just so far above it all.
Yeah.
And Jerry came in and said, you know, our job is to get people in and out of Yahoo as quickly as possible. And that turned out to be a lie pretty damn soon. They were incompetent. They were snotty. They thought they could push their fire hose on everything. They thought they were going to, destroy the content business while going backwards into it. No, I was never rooting for Yahoo. I'm rooting for Marissa Mayer.
Yes. Okay. And then that is a Silicon Valley pitfall that many companies go through is arrogance.
Yes.
King of the world.
They were one of the original ones.
Yep. King of the world. But I remember Atari. I was talking to Nolan Bushnell last week on triangulation. And I vividly remember that everybody who worked at Atari in the late 70s in Silicon Valley, king of the world, you know?
Yeah.
Their you-know-what did not stink. They were very cocky. And it happens every time. You see it over and over again. It's almost like it's an opera. It's operatic.
Well, that's why it's got to be kind of, Yahoo must have been a little attractive. I like the underdog. I like the idea of having to come in someplace where, you know, people have basically given up on. And I should add this to the show notes. There's a Quora question which got posted a couple of months ago. But the question was, why would anyone ever work at Yahoo?
Right. Right.
And one of the Yahoo engineers or managers posted this really thoughtful, interesting, like long answer that was basically like, when you know, just because the blogs and the media and whatever have written a company off doesn't mean that, you know, that there aren't sort of really interesting challenges and opportunities that, you know, maybe, you know, just because your company isn't a media darling doesn't mean that, you know, there aren't good people there. There aren't interesting challenges and that, you know, you get opportunities to move up and move into positions maybe that you wouldn't have a chance at companies that are, you know, very well established.
He thinks the geek doth protest too much. I think that you know, I've heard that and I respect it, but I think that's often, you know, who the hell is left at Yahoo? Not to denigrate anybody who's there, but I'm going to go in there and do wonderful things. Without a leader, without a vision, I don't buy it.
Okay, all right.
Call on your Leo list, I would call Katarina Fake. And Stuart Butterfield, in memo.
Yes.
I would call Cameron Marlowe.
Yes.
I would call, you know, start naming those people, the people who shouldn't have left Yahoo but had damn good reason to leave Yahoo.
Yeah.
Who had a vision for it, who were there for some reason and said, oh, screw it.
Yeah.
And went on to better things. That's who I'd call.
Yeah, fair enough. I read that answer and I thought, interesting. But now that she's... the CEO, and I'd be interested to see, you know, what she puts out there, if she puts out there anything at all. I bet that we're going to see some really interesting hires at Yahoo in the next few months.
You bet. She needs to have a
question. Leo, she comes to you and she says, I'm going to make a brand new world of TV. I'm going to change the world of video. I'm going to change everything. I want to buy Twit Network. What do you say?
Oh.
Now, if Terry Semel had said that or Ross Levinson had said that, I'd say, yeah. If Marissa Mayer says something like that, you listen. And you have some faith in her ability. So,
okay, Gina, she comes to you and she says, I think that really giving people power over Twitter and all this stuff is really wonderful. I want to buy ThinkUp. What do you and Anil say?
Well, I'd have to talk to Anil, but let's say that I would be...
Good thing.
I would certainly consider working for her at some point, for sure.
Yeah, I would too. I mean, I would this, and that's the power... of having somebody like that in there. And the faith that I have, which may be completely misguided, that Marissa sat down, made a plan, knows exactly what she wants to do, and now is going to execute, and we're going to all watch with great interest. By the way, $75 million, Marissa, that's my bottom line.
I want 100.
I was reading about Digg. Yeah, you should get 100. I was reading about Digg, and we'll talk about this in a bit. And, you know, the Digg finally is completely dismantled. And the articles, and at one point, according to one of these articles, I'll see if I can find which one it was, Kevin Rose really wanted to sell Digg to Rupert Murdoch, who was offering, I think, $60 million. Rose would have gotten $36 million, and the board wouldn't let him.
Of course, how long ago?
A few years ago. The board wouldn't let him. And that happens, right? And Kevin was apparently very frustrated. I don't know this, but in this article it said Kevin was extremely frustrated by that, and that's when he started dialing out of Digg.
Yeah, I get that, but I also get not wanting to sell to News Corp.
That, by the way, another business insider.
No great things have happened there.
You know, but he would have been smart, had he. I mean, that was the peak.
It would have been his cash out.
Yeah.
But if you're really an entrepreneur who believes in the company, do you sell it to News Corp?
Well, the reason I credit this story, and I don't know Matt Lindley or some of the people they quoted, but the reason I credit that is because it was shortly after that that Kevin just basically started doing other stuff.
Yeah.
And I could see a founder saying, hey, we can sell this. I could make $36 million. We could sell this to Murdoch. This probably is before the MySpace thing. This is, 2000. Apparently, Yahoo, early in Digg's life cycle, a product person at Yahoo pulled Rose aside, saying he felt Digg could sell the Yahoo for $40 million.
I remember.
This is 2006.
What was that? The screensaver app, very early on.
Flying toasters.
No. When your screensaver come up, it gave you news and content and all this great stuff.
Right. Oh, Pointcast.
Pointcast. And they, as I remember, turned down, I think it was $400 million from News Corp.
You got to know. You got to know when to hold them. Yeah, because you hit the top, and that's a good time to sell. Just, I'm saying, as a real estate owner in California, let's take a break and come back. We could talk a little bit about Digg, the end of the line for Digg. We also there's lots to talk about. And some of it actually having to do with Google in just a little bit, including a kind of a sad story about the guy who really, in many ways, created the idea of wearable glasses getting beat up by McDonald's for wearing glasses. Anyway, we'll talk about that in a second. But first, let's talk about stamps.com. Wouldn't you like a way to print U.S. postage? Just print it yourself. Never again go to the post office to buy stamps or the ATM or the grocery store. In fact, you don't even have to bring packages in. They would just come and take them. If you're an eBay seller or an Amazon seller, this is heaven, right? You can do all your fulfillment right from your desk, quickly, easily. International money order or international mail orders, easy. Does it all. This is stamps.com. Anything you can do at the post office, you can do from your desk with stamps.com. You can buy and print official U.S. postage for any letter or package with your computer and your printer. No special ink or postage meter needed. It's open 24/7, of course, because it is the internet. You can get a digital scale and make sure you never spend more than you need to mail something. This is a really great solution. You get discounts you don't get at the post office. Post office loves this. Post office would rather we just all did this. So they encourage it with 21%, up to 21% off express mail, up to 15% off priority mail. Free pickups. You can schedule them at any time from your mail carrier. Prints from QuickBooks. Now, here's the deal. Go to stamps.com, and you can try this for free with a no-risk trial offer. Click that radio microphone and enter the offer code TWIG, T-W-I-G. And the $80 bonus offer turns into a $110 bonus offer. Here's what you get. $55 worth of postage coupons you can use over a period of time on stamps.com. I think it's a few months. You get the digital scale. You pay shipping and handling for that. That's why I can't technically say it's a free offer because you pay $5 shipping and handling. But you get the free postage. You get the digital scale. You get a month trial of stamps.com. And I think you're going to really see what a benefit. I really want to talk to those of you who do a lot of mailing. Like the more you do, the less it costs. Stamps.com. And our promo code on this is TWIG. Please use that so we get credit.
Shh.
What?
Shh.
Well, I'm shushing the cat. I thought my mic was off. Sorry. Leo, I would never say that to you, Leo. I would never.
Oh, Malik wrote a nice piece. I thought a very nice piece eulogizing Digg, saying even in failure, and that's clearly a failure, $45 million in venture capital. They sold off, I think, a total of $16 million worth of stuff to the Washington Post. LinkedIn bought their IP, the patents, oddly enough. And BetaWorks, which is kind of a neat little news operation, bought for $500,000, bought the Digg assets. And I think Ohm kind of made a good point where he said, hey, it's not whether they returned money to the investors, it's whether they reinvented the news business. Do you agree, Jeff Jarvis?
Gutenberg failed too.
Yeah, good point.
Ah.
So did the railroads.
But it's exactly the same argument that sometimes visionaries do things that may make them rich or may not, but they definitely saw something that others didn't see. You know, I think there's a big lesson in the difference between Digg and Reddit, in that Reddit had the courage to hand over more control to its public. Reddit, however, to this day doesn't have much of a business model, but it grew while Digg pissed off its public with a few moves and couldn't recover from that. But I think Kevin absolutely changed the way we look at the power of people. The fact that social is now challenging search as a source of links in great measure comes from Kevin Rose. Gina?
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, it's interesting that Reddit really kind of capitalized on Digg's, you know, failure. Digg's failure. What was it? Was that one redesign that things went really
Digg
terribly
four.
Wrong?
And it was my idea, by the way. I told Kevin to do it.
You know, Kevin's a brilliant product person.
He
really is. And, you know, it's interesting that it sort of coincided with him becoming less engaged with the product. But, you know, it's funny. Anil, my co-founder Anil, is he's chatting at me right now. And he says all of Web 2.0 failed, but also had a huge impact. So it's you know, you can have a big impact and not necessarily cash out.
Anil.
Jeff said.
That's a very Anil. That's, well, that's, you know, an Anil.
He's all prone to hyperbole, but we love him anyway.
That's okay. All right.
But yeah, no, I think Digg was a really great idea, and I think it had a huge effect on the web in general.
Well, you know, and I have a funny position on this because I, you know, Kevin's a friend, and I've known him since before, and you know what? The good news is he's now at Google Ventures doing what he really does well, which is picking winners. And I think that's a good move for him. I'm kind of sad to see Digg go, but
I look forward to seeing him design product though again.
I agree. He does beautiful stuff. Yep.
Less burned out.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I use BetaWorksNews.me. I think that's a kind of a neat thing. I get an email every day.
News.me is great.
Yeah, and that's what they're going to. Apparently, they're going to fold Digg into News.me. So
because News.me was a combination of BetaWorks and New York Times.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, and so now New York Times owns a piece of
Digg.
An aggregator.
How interesting. I actually I get this email every day, and it's stuff that my Facebook and Twitter friends have read or, you know, shared.
It's the FOMO safety net. You know, it's like, oh, if I haven't looked at Twitter or Facebook, you know, I went on vacation with my partner this weekend. It's like, if I haven't looked at Twitter or Facebook, I know I'm going to get an email with the links I, you know, should have seen.
Right. And it's only 5 or something. I mean, it's pretty quick. And then they have
it's pretty quick.
They have an iPhone app, which I actually haven't downloaded. I just do the email thing. So would that be interesting to see? I don't know what they get. They don't get the patents. They don't get the engineers.
They still have some audience.
They get the audience, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, they get a critical mass.
That's some millions of people a month.
Oh, it was 500K? It's not that much.
Oh, well, 500K plus equity in this new venture.
Now, here's an interesting coinkydink. The guy who was approaching Digg to buy them for $60 million for Rupert Murdoch was Ross Levinson.
It's Levinson. That's right.
It's a small world. It's a very small world.
former interim CEO at Yahoo. So here's a story that just grabbed me, and I don't really know what really happened. It could be more complicated than that. But we all know Steve Mann. For years at MIT, he was a guy who created this thing of walking around with a camera on you, right? He still does, which I didn't realize. Wrote on his blog that he was wearing his device. Now, he claims, and this is interesting, he has a doctor's note for this, because it is more than just, you know, camera, you know, Google Glass style camera on him. He's worn a computer vision system for 34 years, and he says it's necessary for my cognitive functions. I need it. It's more than just, you know. So he carried around, he had carrying around with him documentation, including a letter from his doctor about what all of this was. He toured Paris, went into a number of museums and places where you're not allowed to wear cameras or glasses. Never was challenged, never asked for anything. Goes into the Paris McDonald's on the Champs-Élysées with his glasses on. They say, what are you doing? And he said, you know, he showed him the documentation. Okay. They ordered. They got their food. He was there with his kids. Sat down, and then all of a sudden he gets roughed up by McDonald's employees. The funny thing is that he says, because I was wearing these glasses and they damaged them, the pictures that were taken, which would have otherwise not been saved, were saved. So he has pictures of the McDonald's employees. Now, this is a no-pictures McDonald's. A couple of years ago, somebody got roughed up for taking a picture of the menu. People really got to wise up. Not the customers, the companies. Here's a picture of one of the McDonald's employees tearing up his doctor's letter. This is very Parisian. I spit on your leather. Tearing it up. And then the guy's wearing a McDonald's name tag. Steve looks at it and he turns it over so you can't read it. All of this captured on the camera. Steve says, I don't want money, but they broke the glasses when they tore them off my head. And I just want them to fix the glasses. McDonald's has not responded except to say we are investigating. That's just, I just wanted to. Geek bullying. Now, a couple of things. We don't know the action. We know Steve's side of the story. Who knows? But if we're all going to be wearing Google Glass in the next few years, something's got to happen here.
This is what we have to look forward to.
This is what you're going to look forward to. Do not go in
glass.
France and Germany may be a little dicey for wearing them. I don't know.
Yeah.
They all become street view.
Do you think this is a private? I mean,
what people pinged me about and said, what do you think? Because we don't know enough to know what it is.
Right.
But it would certainly stand to reason. That's what else are you objecting to?
Yeah. And why? What is it? A military installation? It's a McDonald's, for crying out loud. What is it you're worried about people finding out? Casino. You know, I almost got beat up by a casino, a big casino security guy, because we were walking through the casino with our cameras on the way to an event at CES last year. And I had a great camera guy, Hilton, who just played along, and he pointed the camera at the ground, and we just kept walking. And I understand a casino doesn't want you to take any pictures in a casino. I understand that. And it's private property. They have the right to do that. But they don't have the right to rip these things off your head.
I tried to take a picture at a KFC in China just because I was interested in Western restaurants in Beijing. And I was quickly, several employees sort of quickly slipped down around, and said, no photos.
Why not?
I respected that. I mean, there are government installed cameras everywhere, of course.
I've been stopped at Starbucks.
I understand their right to do that. Is it to protect the privacy of other customers?
I don't think so. I think it's more that they fear there's going to be a corporate espionage or I don't know. Get over it, because everyone on Earth is going to have a camera very soon.
Well, and people like Thomas Hawk, who documents this all the time, I mean, even though it's technically legal to shoot pictures in public, gets harassed all the time by the police. So I don't know.
Really?
Oh, yeah, gosh. It's in fact, most people who have been who are photographers who have been taking pictures in public places have stories to tell. It's post 9/11. People are very paranoid. And you're right. There's cameras everywhere. The government has plenty of cameras.
Yeah, in China, I just was like, you know what? I don't want to get carted off right now. I'm going to talk this up to a cultural...
And I think the thing to do if you were asked in a private place... The problem is these things are like almost welded into his head. They cannot be taken off his head without tools.
Right.
But what he should have done is grabbed his food and said, okay, I'm sorry, and leave. But never... Because it is their right, but they shouldn't be ripping them off your head, for crying out loud.
Yeah.
Survey says, I don't know about surveys. This is from Search Engine Land. Danny Sullivan quoting the annual American Customer Satisfaction Index. Bing has practically matched Google for customer satisfaction. But just to show that this is meaningless, ask.com is a close third. 82 points for Google, 81 points for Bing, 80 points for ask.com. Who uses ask.com?
Someone with a really old browser and a really old toolbar installed.
Yahoo got 78 points. In fact, I'm going to throw this out. This is crazy.
I have a hot Bing tip later on the show, though. So
ooh.
Stay tuned for that.
Ooh. Are you still using DuckDuckGo and Bing?
I am. I'm still using DuckDuckGo.
Interesting.
Yeah, yeah. I switch to Google sometimes. You know, there are times when DDG doesn't give me what I'm looking for. But yeah, I would say 90% of the time it's just fine. Most of my searches are it's a very programmer friendly search engine. Most of my searches are for code related, you know, error right. messages or right. code documentation, and it does very
it
well
works
with
for that.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anybody still use Cool or Blecko?
Is Cool even alive?
Maybe Cool's gone. I don't know.
I think it's gone, yeah.
The search engine you can't spell.
C-U-I-L? No.
C-U-I-L.
there's cool.com. It's not.
That's the greatest piece of Valley hubris ever.
That's real hubris. You don't know how to spell it, but we're going to do
not
it.
Not only that, but they were going to take over the world. They were,
right.
You know, Google was toast.
Right.
The Wikipedia page, current status, down.
Down. You go to cool.com, you get nothing. Not even a so long and thanks for all the fish. Google Fiber launches next week. They made a big deal, of course, about the gigabit fiber that they were going to install. Where is it? Kansas City?
Kansas City.
Kansas City, Missouri or Kansas City, Kansas? Missouri, right? KCMO. Pretty cool. This is Google's way of saying, hey, if you had lots of bandwidth, this is what it would be like. Just last week, Time Warner Cable in Kansas City placed posters around its headquarters asking employees to provide any information they hear about Google Fiber. Hey, if you I hear that Google is if you hear anything, let us know. We don't know, but we want to know what's going on.
Sad.
So they selected them in March, and they're about to Google sent out invitations to a special event on July 26th in Kansas City. A special announcement about Google Fiber and the next chapter of the internet. And everybody's just jealous as hell. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm.
But they say they'll do it in other cities sometime. Maybe Yahoo should do the get the fiber business. Google Plus Maker Camp. Targeting tech-savvy teens. They're doing this with Make Magazine. This is so smart. A six-week online summer camp for 13 to 18-year-olds. They'll try to build 30 projects in 30 days. Mark Fraunfelder will be there. Steven
nice.
And Fritz of EP Bird. Those are the Coke and Menos guys.
Is it in person or is it virtual?
Wait a minute. Beginning today, a Make Camp counselor will post how-to instructions for a new project online.
Is it at Google Plus?
Yeah, it's Maker Camp on Google Plus.
So this is like their hangouts and...
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out how you could apply for it and go like tomorrow.
Welcome, campers. Maker, this is so cool.
Follow Make on Google Plus.
Follow Make on Google Plus. Yep. Okay. I'll add them to my... Okay, now I'm following them. You know, with brands, you don't have to circle them. You just follow them.
Oh, so they do the Hangouts on Air, and Hangouts is great. They did the Hangouts on Air, so you can watch Maker Camp Day 3 with terrariums.
Oh, fun.
Cool.
So this is great. A kid can stay home and not have to go to camp, but still do some
stuff.
Mom,
will you go out and buy me $300 worth of equipment so I can make this thing?
I need some moss. I need some dirt.
Mason jar terrariums. Fun.
Well, terrariums are also a type of biosphere. This is just kind of like a very wet
version. This is so awesome.
They're both biospheres. But terrariums, when you think terrarium, this is what
Love
you think
this.
Of. You don't necessarily think of like, you know, a science experiment that you leave out in the sun.
I'm sorry. The show is over. I want to watch this and make a terrarium
super
now.
Wet terrarium, mm-hmm.
You know, then it's a moss.
You can have...
Before, the day before, they learned how to make, what were they making? They have, this is Weird Science Wednesday today. This is so cool.
Oh, they're doing animated GIFs.
Animated GIFs. That's good, everybody, or GIFs, I'm sorry.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. That's a useful thing to know on Google Plus.
Mm-hmm. No, not more of them.
But it's, what it's teaching kids is animation, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool. Tinkering Tuesday. And they had Frog Designs' Jared Ficklin doing the lesson. This is neat. So it's not too late. You can just join, follow Make, M-A-K-E, on Google Plus. And you can be a part of camp. I want to go to camp. You'll have to, I don't know, you'll have to provide your own dirt and tent and softball games and make your own lanyards on your own.
I'm envisioning Twit Camp.
Twit Camp. Good idea.
Ooh.
Good idea. All right, we're going to take a break, and then Jeff and Gina and I will talk about our new toy.
Yeah.
Even MG Siegler liked this.
Even MG.
Wow. We'll talk about it in just a second, but first a word from Ford. You know, this is kind of interesting, this kind of thing, but this would work very well in your new Ford because it's got Bluetooth, A2DP, and so forth. You could tie it in with the Ford automobile. See, what Ford sees, this was a very interesting challenge. Here you are. You're making a car which is going to last years, right? People are going to own that for, I don't know, I own my car for 10 years. So 10 years from now, what's technology going to even look like? So how do you design a car that could keep up to date? And they're thinking about all sorts of stuff. I asked him about upgradability. He said, yeah, we're thinking about upgrade modules, software upgrades. But what they realized is if you make the car a platform, you give it all the sensors and tools and stuff and an API, then developers can develop stuff on portable devices like tablets or phones. And then when you get in the car, you're bringing more smarts that can interface with the car. Brilliant. And that's why if you go to Ford.com/technology, you can take a look at some of the interesting things they're doing with Ford, with AppLink. And they even have a demo app called My Ford Mobile. It's a smartphone app for Android, iOS, and for BlackBerry, too. If we go to the 2012 Ford Focus, that's the first car it works with right now. You can find out more. There's a video here. You know, they talk about the charging station, the super fast charging they do. They talk about the regenerative braking. They even have, I love this, they have driver's ed. This is not in the part of the ad, but I'm going to say it anyway because it's really cool, where you learn how to use things like regenerative braking. They've got a brake coach in the car that helps you maximize the range of your Focus. Because all of these instrument clusters are soft. They're just screens, so they can put stuff like a brake coach up there. So anyway, back to the My Ford Mobile app. It lets you monitor your charge of your Focus Electric. It lets you schedule your charging so that you can do it at the most affordable times, according to your utility. It provides you with a location of your vehicle, the location of the nearest charging stations, the most efficient route to get there. Oh, it's so pretty. It even estimates the amount of CO2 emissions and the money you've saved on your driving style and helps you coach you to a more efficient driving style. This is, I think, a proof of concept as much as of anything else to show that you can make apps that just talk to the car, the car talks back. Very cool stuff. Now, how would you find out about this? Well, you can go to Ford.com/technology. Or look for an EV-certified Ford dealer near you and say, I want to test drive the Focus Electric, the 2012 Ford Focus Electric, and bring your smartphone, and you can put the app on there. The app's free. They even have a My Ford Mobile website and all sorts of stuff, leaderboards, that kind of stuff. Ford.com/technology. So MG Siegler, who is, as we all know, really nice guy, good friend, and kind of a Mac fanatic, and loves the iPad beyond all words. And, you know, I would include Andy Yanako as another guy who's said for a long time, the iPad is the best. There's nothing that can beat it. Android's not close. Even Andy Yanako, I notice, is now carrying a Galaxy S3 Android phone and likes it a lot. And Andy and MG both are singing the praises of this. This is the Galaxy Nexus 7, a tablet from Google. And you, Gina, got yours at Google I.O.
At Google I.O., yeah. So the ones at Google I.O. have the white back.
I'm sorry, I said the word Galaxy. There's no Galaxy. That's
right.
Samsung.
Just the Nexus 7.
The two words are bonded in my mind. The Nexus 7.
This is an awesome device. I'm really happy that people who have been in the iOS world for a long time, like MG, appreciate it. You know, because, I mean, I've kind of been embedded in the Android world for a while, and I couldn't tell if I'm just, like, relieved because, you know, Android hasn't been, you know, fantastic up until now, or if it truly is great. And so it's nice to see people like MG who have been very highly critical of Android say that they like it. It's a great device. I love it. I can't keep my hands off this thing. I haven't touched my iPad. I find myself reaching for it all the time. It's just a great device. And all of my iPad stuff works with it, too, on my keyboard and stylus. I don't know. What are you thinking, Leo? You've had it for a few days now.
I completely agree. Andy Yanako says, Google just released a $199 computer. That's, you know, the first thing you marvel at, this is a quad-core Tegra 3 processor, super fast. It's a beautiful high-def IPS screen with great off-angle viewing.
Not quite Retina.
Not quite Retina, but I think it's over 200 DPI. I mean, it's good. It's good, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Very snappy. And this is what MG noted, it really establishes that a 7-inch tablet is a good form factor. It may be superior even to the 4x3 10-inch iPad.
I wish it would go landscape.
It does. All you have to do is tap this button. Oh, not on the home screen.
The home screen doesn't. Yeah.
But if you're like, let's say we're at Google Plus, this is just getting used to Jelly Bean.
You tap what?
When you slide down the notifications, there's a little rotator there that you can lock or unlock. And the default, by the way, is locked. And now if I slide it up again, it should.
I do need remedial help with these things always.
And by the way, I love the way Google Plus, when you're in portrait mode, scrolls up. And when you're in landscape mode.
That's cool.
You know, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, that looks really nice.
It's beautiful.
Jeff, don't feel bad. I accidentally locked the orientation just by pulling down the notifications, and I didn't realize that I'd done it. And I answered a question on Quora about whether or not this thing could be a GPS, and I said, the maps is portrait only, which was completely wrong. I just locked it, so don't feel bad.
The text is – I've been using it all day. The text is a little small for my aged eyes, and I can't find where to
increase that. Yeah, you can change that, too. I hate to tell you.
Okay, got it.
Make it bigger. We'll give you a little in-service.
that is part of the insight, though, about a non-Apple OS.
It's a little harder to find those.
You got to dig around a little bit.
I mean, that rotation lock is very obscure. It's a tiny little icon.
Yeah.
And then drop down of the notifications, that's really where you put it. And but, it is one of the complaints I had about Ice Cream Sandwich, which holds up through Jelly Bean, is things like that. This, you know, that's how you get to settings on this, is you pull down notifications and there's a tiny little settings icon. That to me is not the best user interface, but that's okay.
But I really liked it all day. What else about it? I think what it motivates me to do finally. I have my iPhone still. I'm still on Apple Calendar and Mail. I'm finally going to really make the switch and go full Android Google on all these functions.
I've got the Kindle app on here. This is a perfect size for book reading. You don't need the bigger size, I think.
Yeah, yes. You can lay in bed. It's light enough. You can hold it with one hand and read, which is really nice.
I got to make a Skype call. Can I make a Skype call to
what I want to know is whether I can get on the show with it.
You might be able to. Yeah, I don't know.
Considering that I'm always in desperate straits and you know, the Tanzania trying to get on.
You should be able to. Now, it doesn't have a back camera. It does have a front camera. And the front camera works for Hangouts. Skype says, well, we don't know anything about this device. We think it'll work.
Oh.
But let me try. I haven't tried it. So Okay, let me see if I have line three here. I'll put go down to my contacts. Don't show this yet.
Jeff, if you go into settings, accessibility, there is a large text checkbox.
It's the old guy's setting. in the old guy's setting.
All right, so I am now calling Skype.
They make that accessible. I mean, no offense to accessibility, but geez.
Oh, it's a blocked contact. I can't call you, apparently. Oh, yeah, this might be old.
Legibility.
You call me. I'm Chief Twit. Got it.
Ooh, it's awfully big, but all right.
What are the... Oh, I love, and I should... This is the biggest new thing that you can only get in Jelly Bean, Google Now. And that was the thing where I was talking about the creepy factor. Like, Google Now knows that you like the Giants because you've been searching for them. So this is a Google Now. You can see... Now, I'm going to show you Google Now, but you can... Oh, wait a minute. Somebody's calling me. Let's see. I'll answer with video. Now, will you see... There's me. There's me looking at me. Now, can you go to line three and show me?
Yep. One second.
I'll turn down the audio.
And so this is the video we're getting from you.
So, yeah, you can. Now, if I flip it, will it... Oh, yeah, it does. That's pretty,
pretty good.
They're laughing because I'm mugging. But the fact that you can use Skype with this means you can use this for phone calls.
If that's you're on Wi-Fi, right.
Right. No 3G. That's kind of a negative.
Yeah, it is. It'd be nice for it to be an option, but I think to make it simpler. I went ahead and bought the larger version. I bought the 16 gig.
Why not?
Version. Mm-hmm. Why not?
Now, one of the things I've noted, you know, people say, well, Apple has 64 gigs. So much of this is in the cloud that you don't necessarily, like, for instance, Google Music, you're playing from the cloud.
Yeah, and you're on Wi-Fi anyway.
So the things that normally we would have loaded this up with, video, audio, you just play off the internet on Wi-Fi.
Except for the airplane.
Yeah, for the airplane, you're right.
Right.
And you can download from Play Store. You can download.
Oh, I've got another remedial question for you. So I said yes, of course, to Google Now, but I've got this. I still have my perennial problem of two accounts. So my account for this is my basic Gmail account, but my Buzz Machine account, I'd like to make that the one for Google Now, and I can't figure out how to switch it.
You can add an account. Can you add more?
You
than
added
one?
The account in settings. Oh, so you in the Google Now, you want Google Now to work just with that other account.
Yeah, that's where I'm going to have my calendar and all that stuff. Yeah.
So this is Google Now, just for people who want to see. So let me start over again. You have the search box at the top. If you tap it, if you tap the microphone, you'll do a audio search. But this is recent Google searches from any machine. So these were searches I did on my laptop, but it synchronized them over. Cards show here when you need them. So this is my next appointment, triangulation coming up with Eben Upton of Raspberry Pi. 7 minutes. Normal traffic. Do you care about traffic to this place? Yes, I do. This is work. So I'm going to say work. This is the first time it's asked me that, so that's good. That's my workplace. Here's the current weather report, and I know it's going to be 91 degrees on Saturday. That's useful. Here's some sample cards. So this is a really – I kind of like this.
I like it too, but I'm not getting enough out of it. And when I do try to switch to my apps account, it just goes to a blank search page. It gives me no cards at all. I don't know you.
Oh, so in settings in Google Now, you set the privacy accounts. You did choose the other account. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and it won't, it doesn't like me there.
You can by hand, I guess, put in a team.
All right, so I just switched to my other account. It says, are you in? Yes, I'm in. Tells me I'm in San Diego, what the weather is.
I just think this could get better and better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Web 9720 says you have to enable it in your Google Apps settings, Jeff.
Thank you very much. I have to enable Google Now.
Okay. In your apps, apparently.
Oh.
I don't know if he's making that up.
Yeah, did it prompt you and say, do you want to turn this on? I had to tap, like, yes, I'm in.
Right. In fact, I tapped no by accident. And then I had to search around to find out how to turn it back on, but it's in the settings.
And Leo, you saw that from the lock screen, you get into Now by kind of just, like...
Oh.
By dragging up the lock and the Google is right there.
Oh, that's cool. See, I have a pattern on that, so I don't get to see a lot.
Okay.
I wish they would allow you that kind of functionality and the pattern.
Right.
Face recognition is in this. Front-facing camera enables that. That's a gimmick. I don't recommend it necessarily. Just nice, really nice. And you can see why the rumors are that Apple's going to make a 7-inch tablet, or in their case, almost 8 inches. Theirs is going to be square, though. I think this is exactly what you want. You could put this in a pocket, a back pocket, stuff like that.
What strikes me is that there is no right size, that we're dancing around. You know, there just plain is no right size.
Right.
And that's where I think we got to get to the next level of displays. And that's where glass comes in.
Right.
That's where bendable displays will come in and things like that. Because in some ways, this feels cramped to me for certain purposes. In other ways, it feels just right to me. The difference between this and a 5-inch, you know, isn't that huge. Different strokes, different needs, different folks.
Flipboard looks great on this. This is no longer exclusive to the Galaxy S3. Just really fantastic. I couldn't be happier. I spent a lot of time in bed with this last night.
Which was a stat I saw, by the way, on Twitter yesterday. I forget who had it. That most, I think it was from the Fortune conference. Bill Gross tweeted this, that most, the highest level of tablet activity is 10:15 at night.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Which I, of course, responded,
porn.
Not that I would do that, but
I've got chess games going on. I mean, this is exactly the right size.
This is the computer you want in your hands when there's dumb TV on and you just kind of, you're half paying attention and you want to read and, you know, multitask. And it's so light. It feels it's a lot more casual to me than the iPad. The iPad just feels kind of heavier and colder. It's got more weight to it. This just feels more just like a book.
And can I just say again, $200.
$200.
That's less than a netbook.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And a rock-solid Linux-based operating system.
Yep.
This is a lot to recommend this.
And Android
hundreds of thousands
really
of apps.
Good. Yeah. Yeah, the apps are there now. You really can't, you know, the argument that the apps that you want aren't on Android doesn't hold as much water anymore.
It costs less than an iPod Classic.
Wow. That's a very good analogy, Chad Johnson. The iPod Classic is $249.
Wow.
That says a lot. This is amazing. Battery life, I've got 15 hours and 15 minutes on battery at 60%. That can't be right.
Mine didn't charge last night.
Much like I think that's wrong. I think I charged it in between there. But I would say 8 or 9 hours for sure. Not a problem. Screen is what uses most of it. Very, very medium battery life for the battery usage for everything else. It's the
and
screen.
And man, Chrome on Android is awesome, and it's just not as good on iOS. Like it's got
this is so cool. Yeah,
it's got that magnification when you tap in an area where the links are real close, it magnifies, and so you can tap, you know, so you don't ever tap to the wrong place. That request desktop site is so great.
Isn't that
great? When you get redirected to this crappy mobile site, you just say to request desktop site. Right. You get exactly what you get on your desktop. And the syncing the tabs across computers. Now, Android for Chrome for Android, you don't need the Nexus 7. You can get it on any version of Android, I think, maybe as far back as Gingerbread. But the fact that it's the default browser on Jelly Bean and it's on this beautiful, you know, bigger screen, man, I've just been loving it. So great.
Now, I heavily customized mine. I took off all the content consumption widgets. But when you get it out of the box, it shows magazines, it shows TV, it shows movies, it shows books.
It looked like the fire. Yeah, well, it reminded me of the days of getting the crapware you got on computers all the time.
And there's some crazy about that. Yeah.
Well, this is a Play Store buying device. I mean, this is, you know, this is, let's just be clear about what this is. They want you to buy stuff from the Play Store. And let's also be frank. The Play Store's movies and TV selection is not great.
No.
Right.
But, you know, this is Google making a bet, right, on the future. That you're going to be buying this media. I mean, I installed the Kindle app, and I've been reading my Kindle books.
Yep.
So I want it. You get a credit. Did you get a credit to the Play Store, the $25 Play Store credit?
That was for you guys. But I think we did get some free content. I'm looking at Transformers Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah, I got a credit, too.
Did you? Oh, all right. Maybe I did, and I just didn't notice it.
Yeah, so they want you to set up your account and have the purchasing experience and get some media onto it. I mean, on Google Music, I really wasn't using it before, but now that it's on the 7, I am using it.
Yeah, because all your music, it's amazing. You log in and all your music is available on your thing already.
Yeah. It's great.
All your music, yeah.
And someone in the chat room pointed out that Chrome is 4.0, Android 4.0 and above. So
oh, that's right. That's too
bad. It's ICS and up.
Yeah.
So this is not the Android experience that most people are having. But this is, you know, for people who've been curious about Android, I mean, certainly not our listeners but or viewers, but people who've been curious about Android, $200, no contract. I mean, this is, you know, I think we're going to see a lot more developers take the larger screen more seriously. I mean, this is no Zoom. This is no Tab. This is a serious Android tablet. And so I think we're going to see a lot more apps in the next few months come out just for this thing.
Very exciting. I think this is a breakthrough product. And I don't think this is the last $200 computer we're going to see. And it's thanks to the free and open Linux operating system that this can even exist.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Google. Thanks to Google. Apparently it has a magnetic sensor. You know, is that what this thing is on the lower left-hand side, the four copper dots? Is that a magnetic sensor? Is that a charging?
I don't think so. That looks like a charging thing. Not clear what that is. You know, I watched the video that showed the magnet and it would come home screen would go on and off. I couldn't reproduce it with mine. Were you able to reproduce it?
Yeah, we were able to do it with a smart cover, ironically, from an Apple iPad.
Yeah, I tried that.
It wasn't so easy.
It wasn't easy.
I kind of had to flop it around. And
it's the lower left corner?
Supposedly, yeah.
Like down here?
Yeah, huh. we were able to flop it around and we got it to.
I'm dying. I got so addicted to my keyboard for the iPad. I'm dying for a nice case for this with the keyboard.
Yeah, this will work with any Bluetooth. There's an HP netbook for $299 with a crappy Atom processor.
I still don't understand why the Chromebook is so expensive.
Yeah. This is what you want. Chrome OS. I have never got Chrome OS. I still don't. This is what
I think
want.
For my students, there's an opportunity for Chrome OS because I think when you use things like WeVideo, which is an online video editing platform, right. And you use online photo editing and that kind of stuff, I think our students could get a really inexpensive device to do media online, and I think that has some power to it. That's why I mentioned the Chromebook. But yeah, I don't know how long it is.
The Chromebook is now available. Cafes. Oh, go ahead, Jeff. Sorry.
I was just to finish. It's now available in 100 Best Buys. So if you want to get your hands on one, you can find a Best Buy and go touch it. Go ahead, Gina.
Yeah, I was going to say just like internet cafes and school libraries and, you know, just places where there should be internet access, you know, student centers and that kind of thing. That makes complete sense. But I admit I haven't opened my Chromebox yet.
And just in case you're curious, this from the risk assessment blog on Ars Technica. According to a, quote, serial hacker, Jelly Bean will make it much harder to exploit because of security features written in here.
This was a Google engineer who said it would be pretty hard, or this was a
security researcher John Oberheide published a analysis. I don't think he's a Google guy.
Okay, I was going to say if Google's saying that, it's just
he works for Duo Security exploit mitigations in Android Jelly Bean 4.1. John Oberheide. They're doing ASLR, address space randomization, which actually desktop operating systems have been doing for some time. Makes it very difficult to write data right into the programs into the data stack and then execute them because it's all moved
That's
around.
Good. That's good.
Yeah. So pretty good. Pretty impressive. Position independent executables, address space randomization, linker randomization, ELF hardening, info leak prevention. They're really doing some good stuff. And you need to, right? You don't want to make this an easily exploited platform. Chrome for iOS owns 1.5% of the iOS browser market. Pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Today, the import ban on Motorola Android products takes effect. So if you wanted a Zoom, I'm sorry.
For all those people clamoring for a Zoom.
Yeah, actually, it's 18 products, including phones, of course. Motorola says, we can't share specific details. We have employed a range of proactive measures to ensure there's no continuing infringement under the ITC's interpretation of this single Microsoft patent. So that means the Atrix, the Backflip, the Bravo, the Charm, the Click, the Defy, the Devour, the Droid, the Flip Out, the Flip Side, the Spice, and the Zoom will all get patches of some kind that will make it legal.
Yet in the UK, you'll see a link to down from there, Apple is now ordered to eat crow in public regarding the Samsung tablet.
This judge, I like this judge. He is really, is this the same judge who said Samsung is not cool enough to have stolen anything?
Was that the one?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it is. He says, Apple was ordered by a judge to publish a notice on its website in the UK and in British newspapers saying Samsung did not copy designs for the iPad. Holy cow.
Wow.
It should be posted on the homepage for 6 months and published in several newspapers and magazines. That's hardcore.
Wait. On the homepage of Apple.com, there's going to be a statement that Samsung did not copy them?
In England only, yeah.
In England only. Okay, so Apple.co.uk or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that screenshot went everywhere. Somebody put up, I thought I put it on the rundown, but there was a cartoon of Simpsons at the blackboard. You know, Apple did not, Samsung did not steal from Apple. Apple promised to stop being a dork.
Now, Apple this, it won't happen tomorrow because Apple is appealing. So who knows? Something could change. But
Apple's good at a lot of things, but eating crow, not one of them.
That judge was clearly no Apple fan. I mean, he's the guy who said in his ruling, he said, oh, no, Samsung, not only did Samsung not copy you, Apple, they are not cool enough to have copied you. That guy, I don't know what he's smoking, but holy cow. Office 2013, we haven't talked about it. That really is a very interesting shift for Microsoft, totally cloud-based. In fact, the default when you save a document in Word on the desktop is to save it to the cloud, not to the desktop. SkyDrive is the default for where stuff goes. It will have Metro. The rumor mill continues, but no word from Microsoft whether there will be Android or iOS versions of Office 13. But everybody thinks that's probably the case, maybe after the Surface ships. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, Gina's tip, Jeff's number, and my tool. But first, Ting. You know, I made the mistake. I gave my lent my Ting phone to Jolie O'Dell. And I still don't have it back. Be careful who you lend your phones to. Ting is really cool. This is Elliot Noss and his gang at Tucows, who have reinvented how domain name registration happens, have done the same now, or attempted to do the same with self-service. Their whole idea is to do a cell company that has honest pricing. Well, no, I'm sorry. That can't possibly work. The bills for megabytes, minutes, and text messages separately, and you only pay for what you use, and you never pay a penalty for using more. There are no premiums, no penalties. You pay for exactly what you use. They have all the best 4G Android phones. They're on the Sprint network, so if you get Sprint, if Sprint works where you are, it'll work great. And we're going to give you a deal, $50 off your device purchase if you go to ting.com/twig. But to browse around before you decide to buy, take a look at the plans. For instance, this is so cool. You choose how many phones you want from, you know, one on up. That's why this is great for families or businesses. I'm going to have two phones, and I'm going to buy a package of minutes, say 2,000 minutes, 4,000 text messages, 3 gigabytes of data. That's a ton of everything. $118 a month for both phones. Now, here's the beauty part. If I don't use all those minutes, they give me a refund. If I don't use all those messages, they give me a refund. If I use more, they just charge me prorated at the rate that I would have paid if I'd chosen that plan. And always included at no charge, voicemail, picture and video messaging, three-way calling, caller ID, and I know you want this, tethering and hotspotting included. Yay. Free. Businesses and families can have unlimited devices on an account and can manage and track each device. They've got a great web interface. It really is fantastic. I want you to try Ting right now. Visit ting.com/twig. When you do, $50 off your phone purchase. This is how cell phone companies should be. And, you know, if you've been using Ting, let me know. I'd love to hear from some Ting users. Really fantastic. It's so cool. They have hotspots, too. The little, you know, the dongles, the MiFis. ting.com/twig. We thank them for their support. We thank them, more importantly, for changing the cell business. Maybe this will be a shot across the bow on the big guys. Okay, Gina Trapani, your tip, I'm sure. Yeah, you got several tips here.
Yeah, I got two tips. The first one flew by in Google Plus while we were talking. We talked about this at Google I.O. Google was going to enable offline access to your docs in Google Docs. And apparently that just became available.
Yay!
Yeah, if you go to your docs, which is drive.google.com, and you click on the more link in the tool belt. The tool belt is what they call the links kind of down the side. Click on the more link, click on offline docs. You have to actually enable them, and you only want to enable them on your own computer, not a public computer. So you click on enable offline docs, and then you install a Chrome web app to manage offline docs. So if you're writing something and you go offline, or if you're on a plane, you can continue to work on it.
Now, you have to be using Chrome for this to work, or can you use other browsers?
Oh, that's a good
question.
You
have to install the Drive Chrome web app.
Yeah, so it sounds like you need to be using Chrome, right?
Yeah, it looks like you do need to be using Chrome. Okay. Add to Chrome.
Well, that's how mail works, too. I mean, I've been using the offline mail for Gmail, right. Both accounts. And in some ways, the Chrome app is almost better than the web app.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I'm going to have to try this. But that wasn't your original tip.
My original tip was a Bing tip, because I know so many people here listening to the show are using Bing. Well, you know, I've really been digging Foursquare lately. Foursquare is so great. I'm totally into it. The new mobile app is great. I've been noticing, I've been using lists and comments a lot more. Anyway, Bing just announced that Foursquare tips are now integrated in their what they call their social sidebar. So if you search for a place, let's see if it works for Twit. You search for Twit, and there's a public tip on Foursquare about the Twit brick house. You'll see it in the sidebar. I'm going to try it out.
I think it's Chad's tip. Check out the hot tub in the basement, right?
it should say that. Oh, that's interesting. So it's funny. So I search for Twit, and I see it tells you friends who might know something about this place.
Oh. Says,
Leah Laporte has worked at Twit.
I have, yes.
Huh. Yes, you have.
Yes, I
you
have. Have. Until Marissa Meyer bought it.
For years.
You know, I hadn't looked at this social sidebar in a while. There's a lot of...
Apparently you have a pirate working here. That's good.
So you can see, reviews. And yeah, Jessica J has left a tip about Starbucks. I just searched for Starbucks. So if you're a fan of Foursquare, which I am, and you're interested to see kind of... that content show up in other places. I would love actually to see this in Google search results or DuckDuckGo search results.
Yeah, that's neat. Yeah,
that's interesting.
I like Foursquare. I hope it. I do hope it continues on.
They're good people and they've done some good things.
Yep.
Yeah, they're good people. They really care, and they built something I never thought I would ever want or participate
in. I know.
Built just a really compelling user experience.
Yeah, I think the minor pivot they did to being a useful directory of what's around you has really made a difference.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah. Dennis's vision has always been, I interviewed him for Public Parts, and Dennis's vision has always been that it's a serendipity generator.
Right.
That you get to the airport, gee, I didn't know that Gina was here, and I can go harass her.
Right.
Or I've been wanting to try this restaurant. Oh, thank you for reminding me. That it really becomes that kind of helpful friend.
Yeah, I mean, when I see that a friend has left a tip someplace that I've checked into and I've never been to before, I get so excited. Like, oh, this is, I have kind of inside information and someone I know. Yeah, it's this common experience, right. That can be disconnected by a long time.
Jeff, your number of the week.
I'll do two because I'm into social this week. A study says that the click-through rates for ads that are in, this is on Inside Facebook, that are in the feed on Facebook beat those on Twitter because Facebook has more targeting data. And then now finally the value of Facebook starts to become clear. What's also interesting, though, is that the click-through on mobile Facebook beats that on web Facebook. So just to throw the numbers out, it's 1.14 click-through rate for mobile Facebook, 0.588 click-through rate for web Facebook, and 0.266 for Twitter.
I believe that. That confirms my own results.
Yeah. So, I think people have been screaming that you can't make any money on mobile. No, mobile has no value. Right. It's not the medium. It's the relationship you have. God. And Then the one other one here is that BuzzFeed just said that Facebook's referrers now equal those of Google at 180 million a quarter.
Wow.
Wow.
Huh.
So that's pretty interesting.
That's very interesting.
It is. It's just BuzzFeed. It's a wonderful Megan Garber piece there, but I found that very interesting. It's where we know it's going, but that's a statistical verification of social recommendation.
Social is better than search. Yep.
Yeah.
It's the new search.
Yep.
Thank you, Trip70, for a little tip in the chat room to take a look at ChromeWebLab.com, a Chrome experiment from the Science Museum in London. And if you go to Chrome Web Lab in Chrome using HTML5, it's just play with it. It's a little something. I'm not going to take the time to play with it, but just play with it. And you can get, okay, we're going to make a lab tag. And this is my identity. I've now joined other visitors from across the world. Great. Let's not break this. Oh, God, we're in trouble. Isn't this cool? This is really nicely done. So I can launch some experiments, play with stuff at the London Science Museum. My browser's really slow, so we won't wait around while it loads, but you can try it, chromeweblab.com. We do this show on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 2100 UTC on twit.tv. Please join us live. We really like that. Look, my orchestra's fired up.
Yeah, this is a crazy psychedelic
This
trip
is good.
Through.
This is good. Yeah.
I'll see music. And
yeah. It's really cool. Please do watch live because we like to see you and we get great tips from our audience. But if you can't, we make on-demand versions, audio and video available always right after the fact. It takes a couple hours to upload it, encode it and upload it at twit.tv/twig and wherever podcasts are found. Stay tuned if you're watching live. I'm very excited. Eben Upton from Raspberry Pi joins us in Triangulation in just a minute. I'm now playing Temple Blocks. Click on any spot to add a note. Ooh. I'm a big fan of this kind of time waster.
Oh, speaking of, can I mention one more thing?
Yes.
InternetDefenseLeague.org tomorrow is launching the cat signal.
Oh, so yeah. The cat signal, yes. Now, what is that going to be? Am I going to see tomorrow. Cat signals on websites?
I think you're going to see them in the sky.
In the sky?
Yes, they're going to do a cat signal on a building. If you go to internetdefenseleague.org/launch, you'll see. So I just contributed to it.
And so this is to say, save our internet.
And if there's a crisis, then they're going to, put out the signal.
In the sky?
And elsewhere.
So if you see a putty tat in the sky?
The trouble.
Trouble. To the bat cave.
To the cat cave.
To the cat cave.
Oh, so you put this up on your website. So this is kind of
different cats here.
I'm putting my email address in this right now.
So you'll get emailed when there's a need. And we should do this too on our on our website. We should participate in the Internet Defense League. The Avengers.
Jeff Jarvis. If there are cats and internet, I'm in there.
So is Chad. They do actually want to raise $19,000 to build 5 giant cat signals that will light up the sky in cities around the world. Oh, my, my.
How much money?
$19,000.
I'll do it.
Let's just do it. I'll chip in some, you chip in some.
We have found Chad's real soft underbelly, haven't we? Someone go scritch it, will you?
Yeah. Actually, this is supposed to go up tomorrow. New York, San Francisco, Washington, London and Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia, if they raise the money. So everybody donate.
$14,000 and $19,000. So folks, come on. Show the power of the Twit Army to save the internet.
No, it's not to save the internet. To put cat signals up.
Yes.
Nothing to do with saving the internet.
Not indifferent cats.
No. Jeff Jarvis. Actively involved cats.
Actively engaged cats.
Engaged cats. Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com. That's his blog. His book, You Must Read Public Parts, is all about life in public and its benefits and drawbacks. And Gina, of course, is at smarterware.org and thinkupapp.com. And thank you both for being here. We love doing the show. Gina has a new show on 5x5. What's it called?
In Beta. 5x5.tv/in beta. Kevin Purdy, who's been on Twig a bunch of times and wrote the Complete Android Guide, he and I co-host. It's just audio. It's not cool. It's not video, but it's just audio.
And it's about web and open source software.
Yep, it sure is.
So if you like that, when Gina geeks out like that, you got it, man. Lots of geeking out. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google.